going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're efforting to get our friend Mo Hamilton on the program. Longtime NBA insider. NBA playoffs are continuing tonight. And been some interesting series so far, Jason. That Lakers-T-Wolves series, and we touched on a little bit during bounce back fallback. But Timberwolves took game one. Lakers came back, take game two. And now they're back in Minnesota. Could Minnesota make this thing very interesting in their
definitely.
Home games?
No, I mean, these are two of the premier defensive. I feel like both these teams' superpower really is their defense. I mean, people get caught up in Luka and is he going to score 35 and all that stuff. But I think it's going to be an old school, lower scoring series. You look at the pace they're playing at, it's kind of a throwback snail's pace. The Lakers don't really have true bigs that I think they can trust. So they don't pick up a lot of easy baskets. Minnesota's, especially at home, a really, really strong defensive team. I think Ant will probably come out of this series as the best player, the guy who made the biggest singular difference. And I just, even, you know, with them not having Karl-Anthony Towns there anymore, like, I mean, guys like Naz Reid, I don't know. I feel like Minnesota's got some matchup problems for them. Minnesota is perfectly fine winning games 87-85. I kind of like the Wolves. I don't love anybody. I haven't played much in that series other than a couple of unders. But that's probably all I will do.
Do you like them in the series overall?
I do. I don't love them. The series bet I liked the most, and I gave it out on air, was Clippers plus 155 to win the series. I thought they should have been favored, even with the Nuggets having obviously home court advantage. And look, it's only three games in; it ain't over by any stretch of the imagination. But like, I put some money on Clippers Cavs final.
Oh,
I did put some money on that. That was one future that I liked before the playoffs started. Like, I think the Clippers can come out of the West. I think the Cavs obviously could come out of the East.
One of the more interesting things that has happened is Kawhi Leonard looks healthy for the first time in 5 years. I don't know how that happened, but it's happening.
He looks healthy and motivated. And I thought their two bigs would do the job on Joker, and they kind of have.
Let's go out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, talk to our friend, longtime NBA insider, Mo Hamilton. And Mo, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. We were just talking about that Clippers-Nuggets series. And the Clippers are now playing back in that brand new Intuit Dome. And Kawhi Leonard looks healthy again. Are the Clippers a sneaky team to come out of the West?
I mean, you can't discount the possibility, right? Like, the way that these guys have looked over the course of the past couple of weeks, you know, the way they finished the regular season, the way they're handling the Nuggets, and more importantly, the way that Kawhi has looked, you know, James Harden kind of turning back the clock a little bit. And, you know, I think that we're spending a lot of time focusing on Kawhi, and rightfully so, but I mean, we haven't really talked that much about Zubac and how great of a player he's become and how dominant of a big man he's been over the course of pretty much the entire season in the Western Conference. Aside from that, you know, I think James Harden is he looks like he's playing freely. Like, he doesn't have a lot of weight on his shoulders. And overall, they look good. They look like a legit contender in the West. And as long as Kawhi remains healthy, then you certainly can't discount the Clippers, because we've seen on more than one occasion what he's capable of doing.
Moke, we're also touching on the Lakers-Timberwolves series, and the series comes back to Minnesota tied at one. Do you see Minnesota pulling out this first-round series?
You know, I there's some legitimate concerns that the Lakers should have about this, and it's just from a matchup standpoint. You know, I look at these guys and I think that they're similar to the Pistons and the Knicks, where one team I think is just much tougher than the other. You know, they're bruising. And, you know, I'm talking about the Timberwolves. And over there in the East, I kind of would say that the Pistons, I think, are the tougher, more bruising team. And, you know, when you have a player like a Luka Doncic, you know, you certainly don't discount his ability to elevate his team and to get you four, or in this case, three more wins. But you can't also just assume that LeBron and the rest of the guys, Austin Reeves, are going to be okay being pounded on by guys like Julius Randle, you know? So I think that's the main concern that I would have if I were the Lakers. All that said, I still think I favor them in the series, but I think this one is going to go much longer than most people assumed. And part of the reason why is because, you know, Anthony Edwards, like, this guy's only 23 years old, but he feels like his time is now. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, he's looking at LeBron and Luka as a barbecue chicken, you know, to quote the great Shaquille O'Neal. And he's looking at these guys and he's like, man, if I can knock these guys off, you know, that's another feather in my cap as I try to become one of the faces of the league and be renowned as being, you know, one of the top young guys out there. So I think this is a long series. I like how the Timberwolves match up against the Lakers. At the end of the day, you know, I really think it's just going to come down to who's going to be the third best players in the third best player in the series. Like, is it going to be LeBron? Is it going to be Julius Randle? Is it going to be somebody else? If LeBron is that third best player, then I think the Lakers pull it out. And at this point, I would still bet on that. But again, this thing is going to be much longer than most people assumed, I think.
Obviously, these playoff series are like, they're dictated by adjustments, right? And you mentioned the Pistons-Knicks series, and that's been a bit of a slugfest. Game two, I thought Jalen Brunson was out of control. I thought he was trying to draw fouls. He was going into the paint when they clearly knew he would be going into the paint instead of dishing. I don't know. I didn't like it, and there's no way that Karl Anthony Towns, a career 40% three-point shooter, can't be at least getting looks from the three-point line and getting fed the ball occasionally. And so I thought a recalibration was coming, and boy, did it, right? And Towns is shooting threes, and he's scoring his 30 points, and they hold on and win. Do you think that the Knicks have sort of figured some things out now and can be the better team here, or are the Pistons pesky enough to push this to six or seven?
Yeah, I think from the beginning, I thought the Knicks would get them, and I thought it would go six. I didn't really understand a lot of the there's a little bit of hubris coming out of at least some in New York, mm-hmm. thinking that, these guys have no experience. The Knicks are going to roll these guys up and get them out of the playoffs quickly. And I thought that was a little off base. You know, the Pistons were one of the best teams over the second half of the season, you know, and this is the first team in NBA history that tripled its win total from the prior season. Now, obviously, Cade missed a lot of time last season, so, you know, it might not be totally fair to say, oh, this team tripled its win total. But the biggest thing is this past season really has sort of been a coming out party for Cade Cunningham, similar to what we saw for Anthony Edwards, a season or two ago. So the issue that I have if I'm the Knicks is that it seems too easy for Dennis Schroeder and for Cade to cut through their defense, find their way into the paint, and to get good looks for some of their shooters. So, like, the Knicks obviously ended up winning game three, but I'm watching that game last night, and, you know, there are a lot of wide open 3-point shots the Pistons just ended up missing in the fourth quarter. You know, if two more of those shots dropped, we'd be talking about a completely different series. So I think if I'm the Knicks defensively, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges being able to stay in front of Cade Cunningham. I feel like all too many times during the course of this series already, I've seen Cade get by them fairly easily. So all that said, you know, if you're the Knicks and you have Karl Anthony Towns, you know, shooting efficiently, he was 10 of 18 from the field last night, 4 of 8 from 3, if you're going to get that kind of production from him, you probably end up winning the series, just because I will give Brunson the benefit of the doubt of saying that he will more or less be able to match the output of Cade Cunningham. But again, it's going to come down to who's going to be the third best player over the course of this series. So last night, you know, you could say that Cat was either the first or third best player, depending on how you look at it. And if that's the case, then the Knicks will get them. And, you know, I still like my pick of Knicks in six. But again, when you see a game as closely contested as it was last night, and you see how close it's been through three so far, you know that these teams are pretty evenly matched. And the youth and the strength of the Pistons is not going to be something that's very easy for the Knicks to contend with, especially because for the most part, the Knicks are really relying on just a 7 to at most 8-man rotation. And over the course of a long series, you know, the beating that they're taking, it has the potential to sort of catch up to them. So again, I think this one will be a very competitive series, much like Lakers, Minnesota, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out the rest of the way.
Talking with Mo Hamilton's Inside Access here on the Fan. Mo, before we let you go, since we've watched the Eastern Conference playoffs so far, have you seen anything that would lead you to believe we're not getting ready for a Cavs-Celtics Eastern Conference final?
Nah, I don't think so. And I mean, the thing about the Celtics, so at the end of the day, you got to play the game, right? Like you got to play the game. There have been times over the course of history where we've seen star players and we've seen guys, you know, a guy roll an ankle, a guy twist a knee, and, you know, things end up being different than we thought. I mean, Giannis, right? Like, you know, maybe the Bucks have a better postseason last season if Giannis doesn't get hurt. Now, that said, what's funny about the Celtics is they're kind of going through that right now. You know,
yeah. Like,
you know, Porzingis gets his head busted open. Jaylen Brown's knee's been bugging him for the past couple of weeks. Jason Tatum, you know, has a bone bruise on his wrist. And Jaylen Brown is like, okay, it's all good, man. I got it. And he goes out and he gives you a cool, you know, nearly 40-point night, quite efficient, and has the Celtics, you know, kind of waltz to an important win in that series without even really breaking a sweat. So, you know, on the Celtics side, I think that they know that they're playing for history. They're trying to become the first team to repeat in quite some time. I guess that would be since the Warriors did it many, many moons ago. And as far as the Cavaliers are concerned, this just clearly seems like a team on a mission.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think even if you took Donovan Mitchell off of this team, I think we're heading for a really interesting debate once the first team comes out. I'm assuming that a lot of voters ended up having to choose between Donovan Mitchell and Jalen Brunson. I'm really interested in seeing how that ends up playing itself out. But the point is, what I'm trying to say is the Cavaliers are just a supremely talented team. There's so much talent there. Mm-hmm. I think even if you took Donovan off of that team, that they would still be, you know, a team winning somewhere in the mid-40s, if not better than that. You know what I mean? So I think these two teams have been on a collision course all season long to end up in the Eastern Conference Finals. Nothing that I've seen so far leads me to believe that's not what we're going to get. But they got to get there. You know, it's a long postseason. So I'm looking forward to seeing how the rest of the first round shakes itself out, and do expect that we'll still have Celtics-Cavs when it counts for the conference title.
Mo Hamilton, you're the best, man. Thank you,
thanks,
as always,
buddy,
for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Coming up next, we hit the hot corner, Orioles and Tigers. Even though Underdog Sports had they tweeted out the game has been postponed. I've seen it nowhere else, so don't take that for the gospel, though. It got me, had to tell Bone because he's got BBT, but it looks like it's on. But we'll preview this series in Detroit next. Here.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
here on The Fan. Orioles and the Tigers are supposed to start playing baseball tonight at 6:40. Neither team has posted a lineup yet.
And there are weather concerns.
Yeah, there are weather concerns. Now, as I mentioned, a site called Underdog Sports did say the game had been bagged, but nobody else has said that. So they, I think, were just making stuff up.
I don't know.
Maybe they have sources that nobody else has.
Underdog knows ball. They're good.
Underdog knows ball.
Yeah. So Underdog said the game
had been bagged. Underdog, that we got. We don't have any ball tonight.
Yeah. Let's see if they deleted said tweet. I'm going to their site now. No, it says 14 minutes ago, Orioles Tigers postponed Friday due to rain. It's still up. They have not removed it.
They know ball.
Nobody else has said anything about this, including the beat guys that are there.
Well, I mean, if that were to happen, I don't know that this is something getting postponed because they only make one trip to Detroit. I would think we'd be looking at...
Let's play two.
They're scheduled tomorrow for a 1 o'clock first pitch, so you would do the doubleheader tomorrow.
Yeah. Look, however this shapes out, Casey Mize is a kid that they took really high about 5 or 6 drafts ago. He's had injury concerns. He's been slow to develop. And really, I think, frankly, he was about to be headed to the pen had he not had a heck of a Grapefruit League season. And he has been really good so far. Maybe he is finally blossoming. The kid scheduled to pitch tomorrow, Jackson Jobe, is my pick for American League Rookie of the Year.
Throws a hundy.
I love the Tigers to win that division. Told you guys, I like the Tigers over their win total. I like Tigers to win that division. And I like Jackson Jobe to be American League Rookie of the Year. His first couple starts were shaky, but he's looking more and more confident. That is an elite bullpen. And then obviously Skubal on Sunday. We know all about that. I mean, as good of a lefty as there is on this planet. So this is not going to be easy. The Tigers are used to winning low-scoring games. The Tigers' lineup has dealt with some injuries, Carpenter and others. It's not filled with household names. But what they do is they're a lot like sort of the Royals and the Guardians in that they know who they are and they have really productive at-bats and they just keep the chain
moving.
Torque
started hitting.
And Spencer Torkelson looks like a legitimate power hitter again. He flashed some of that, former 1-1, then obviously had a season and a half that were terrible. He went down to AAA and couldn't even hit there. They called him back up for bleeps and giggles. It's been really, again, almost 2 full lost seasons for him. But he had a great spring, and it's carried over into the regular season. I think A.J. Hinch is one of the best managers in the game. And that's a team that, to me, seems up for the fight. Watching them last year reminded me of the Orioles 2 years ago. Part of the reason I kind of fancy them to win a series or two in the postseason was they just seemed to be young and dumb enough to not know what they didn't know, and they hadn't been burdened by the weight of expectations, and they're still really not. And I think they're a dangerous team. They're athletic and built for that big ballpark. They can go get the ball. And I think Riley Green's one of the best players in baseball that nobody talks about. So this, you heard it in Hyder's voice. We played the clips. This is going to be a tough series. And if they have to face those three pitchers over the course of 2 days instead of 3, it could be even tougher.
That's the biggest storyline coming in is the fact that it's a significant pitching mismatch on paper. And we know this game is very goofy, and that doesn't mean that the Tigers are going to sweep by any means.
Reverse lock.
What does Brandon Young look like in his second MLB start tonight, hopefully, where it looked like he was going to get shelled after allowing 7 straight base runners to reach, but then he was able to settle in for a little bit. Charlie Morton, is this his potential last stand before an IL or some kind of funny business?
Kyle Gibson waiting in the wings.
How does Mean Dean bounce back after giving up 8 extra base hits last start? And then what is this Orioles lineup going to do against those 3 talented starting pitchers?
Yeah, I'm not vouching for the Orioles lineup. I'm not vouching for that. I think the Orioles.
I'm not vouching
offensive
for
offensive prowess
saying,
is
doing?
One of the most overinflated, hyperbolic, you know, things. This is what gets me about the. So wait a minute. Everything we've seen from like June 24th to now is supposed to be a blip, and everything we saw from like opening day last year through June 24th is real. Like, the sample sizes are the same now. Mm-hmm. So why is that? You know what I mean? Why does everybody say, oh, well, that was the real Orioles? Well, what if it wasn't? What if that's the best Gunnar Henderson? Like, that might be the best Gunnar Henderson ever plays in his life. Gunnar Henderson was on, like, 100 home run pace.
Well, yeah. Guys, yeah. That's nobody.
You know what I think of Adley. He's a good player. basically, he's nothing great about him. I don't know that Westbrook's healthy, and if he is, there's too much weight on his shoulders. Oh, yeah, and the switch hitter with 44 home runs is in Toronto now. And the guys they brought in can't even hit lefties.
Tyler O'Neill.
So what if it's just not a very good lineup, too? What if that's just a fact? What if that's just how they were built?
Would be disappointing.
They got a lot of guys, and again, you can tell me it's early, 20 games in.
It is early.
A lot of guys with OPSs around 650.
Mm-hmm.
It's early.
A lot.
Orioles and Tigers, neither team has released their lineup for tonight yet. 6:40 start, Baltimore Baseball Night with the Bone and Ryan Ripken coming up at 5:30 here on the Fan, at least weather permitting, and no other than Underdog Sports, nobody else has commented on the weather for tonight's game. But coming up next, a little purple rain in the forecast here in Charm City, and Malachi Starks meeting with the media via Zoom after being drafted last night. We'll hear what the first-round pick of the Baltimore Ravens had to say next here on The Fan.
I feel like it was a really good place for me to be, just with the type of organization that they run and, you know, the history they have there as well. Just the things that they've been doing the last few years, I think it's a great fit for me. Just to come in and learn from a guy like Kyle Hamilton and a lot of vets in the room like Marlon Humphrey, I think it's amazing, and I think I fit the culture very well.
That's Malachi Starks meeting with the media via Zoom last night. He did have a press conference in the last, about an hour or so ago at the Castle, but this was him last night and talked about feeling that he would land with the Ravens, and he did. This was one of those weird ones. The Ravens pick at 27, and the draft is so unpredictable, but most of the mocks had the Ravens taking Malachi Starks at 27, and they took him.
It just checks a lot of boxes. It fits their overarching philosophies about team building, the importance of shape-shifting defenders on the back end, about them being far more concerned about investing draft capital and human capital and capital in terms of finances in safeties, in especially guys who can cover space and defend the ball in flight. And then they feel like they can manufacture, manipulate, and sort of cultivate pass rush in different ways. So, yeah, it makes sense. He will fit their culture. He'll fit. I mean, if you're him, outside of obviously the lower you get drafted, the less you get paid, right? That's just how the wage scale works. But outside of that, I mean, if you were going to ask him about spots that fit where you're going to play right away, you're going to be used that in a way that's going to emphasize your strengths and allow you time to develop your weaknesses. They can use you a lot, but still be judicious. You're not going to play every single snap of every single situation. If they, you know, if you don't have to, you're going to be able to toggle off of and play off of a freak like Kyle Hamilton. And you're going to have, you know, Chuck Pagano helping devise the scheme, and you're going to play in a place that has a legacy of producing great defensive players. And you've got an offense that, even if the defense isn't having its best day, Lamar and those guys might hang 38 on anybody. I mean, they're you got a lot going for you.
Oh, he's got to be ecstatic to land in Baltimore, and he's going to make
the coach
an
is going to the Hall of Fame, as much as people around here some of them don't want to hear it. That's a fact.
Yeah, and he coached secondary before he came over here, in addition to special teams coordinator with the Eagles. But you can go back to the end of season press conference where Ken asked Eric DaCosta about bringing in a third safety this offseason, and he gave a long answer, and you knew that it was always going to be a priority for them because that's what was really lacking for them, that ability where you want Kyle Hamilton to be able to play at every single level. You want to be able to use him as a chess piece, and it's great that he was a deep safety for them in the second half of the year, and that helped stabilize the defense along with inserting Ardarius Washington. But now you bring in Malachi Starks, you have Ardarius back, you have, of course, Kyle Hamilton. It just makes this defense so much more unpredictable.
More from Malachi Starks. Meeting with the media yesterday evening, talks about his ball skills and what he can bring to the Ravens as a playmaker.
Coming from UC Georgia, that was a big thing that we harped on, was taking the ball away. You know, the game of football is all about the ball. So just being able to have my strengths and being able to hop point and then understanding how to take the ball away in scenarios, I think that's huge, and I think I'll create value for myself and the team as well.
I was talking with somebody was texting me earlier today just how impressive this kid is.
Yeah.
And you heard Eric talk about that earlier in the show. But like he – they had that meeting at the Combine, and he's calling out stuff he sees offensively. And as he points out, playmaker, I remember him making an incredible interception against Oregon. I think it was earlier this past season.
Yeah, I mean, look, they are feeling now like between him and Ardarius, and maybe they pick somebody else up along the way, that they've got options now that they can, when they see fit, have large chunks of games where Kyle Hamilton can be used primarily as that bully slot corner, you know, hybrid linebacker, edge defender. Like, that they had to free themselves up to be able to do that, whether they did it in free agency and it wasn't a great class. Although Simmons is still out there, and boy, I don't know what that price point's going to be. Probably not much. And it had to be addressed in a meaningful way. And it now has been. And that flexibility is key. I bet you Roquan Smith's doing cartwheels about this right now. And if they go out and maybe get that UCLA linebacker tonight, like, as much as Roquan might be like, that dude might replace me in a year, you know what? You might be able to keep making $20 million a year around here for a while, Roquan, if he's next to you.
I think what's also great about Starks is the experience that he has coming in.
Yeah.
Think about it. He started as a freshman at Georgia when Monk was there, when they won a national championship. He's a three-year starter, first team All-American, second team All-American this past season. He comes in with plenty of experience under his belt.
More from Malachi Starks. How does he feel he fits with this Ravens team?
I got a good feel for it through the whole process. I met with him when I went to Combine, and I had some Zooms as well. So I got a good feel for it, and I'm ready to go learn. There's a lot more I have to learn, but I'm ready to get in and, like I said, just learn from the vets and, you know, really just dive into the whole process of being a Raven.
He's also going to get to, you mentioned this early, Jason, Chuck Pagano's there from the jump, and secondary is his realm, and to be able to learn from Chuck Pagano as he starts hitting the offseason workouts.
Well, I mean, look, this kid is different. There might never be another Ed Reed. I'm not making that comparison. But to be able to sit there in a room that Ed Reed once sat in with Chuck Pagano, who I believe was with him at Miami and here, and be able to look at some of the things that, like, in Chuck's scheme, what he's done at different times with the free safety position, That's got to be heady stuff for this young man. And he clearly is all football, and he clearly has a super high IQ and football IQ, and has that growth mentality and mindset, and is a sponge. So, yeah, this again, if Derek Harmon's there, I think Derek Harmon's the pick. But, like, that's not a slight at all on Malachi Starks and what he could be for this team.
But with Pagano, Jason, like, it's not even just Malachi Starks, and that's why the timing of this is so perfect. Nate Wiggins is just entering his second year. There's a lot of clay to mold there. Ardarius Washington is entering his fourth year. Kyle Hamilton entering his fourth year. This is a young, talented secondary with a lot of potential that Chuck Pagano can work with.
Coming up next here on the program, what about the rest of the division? What did we think of their first rounds? Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. It's Northern Exposure next here on The Fan.
Yeah, I've addressed obviously the trade. We just felt like it was a fantastic opportunity for our organization to move down three spots, you know, still get a top-notch prospect in the trenches, adding a pick, you know, in what we view as really the sweet spot for this year's draft class, and then adding a first-round pick next year, you know, in a class that, you know, quite frankly, we think will be a bit stronger in the first 30 picks. So we just felt like over both in the short term and over a multi-year time horizon, it was a fit, you know, for what we wanted to do with the team and what we wanted to do with the roster. And, you know, we're excited to add Mason. We're excited to add the extra draft resources both this year and next.
So that was Andrew Berry, the Browns GM, and Travis Hunter might be two players in one. But when you have a roster like the Cleveland Browns, to me, I like the move of trading down three spots and getting a two and a one next year, because you need bodies. They got to execute the picks. Remember a few years ago, they got a whole bunch of picks for that Julio Jones pick and blew all the picks on that. But what did you think of the trade? What did you think of Mason Graham at five?
I mean, there's a lot of people going gaga over the Jags. I think the Jags gave up an awful lot here. Now, look, I'm a little worried that Mason Graham's not going to be the the pass rushing force that's going to justify this. Like, I'm a little concerned about how some things are going to translate to the next level, and if he's going to be, you know, top five pick level impactful. But if I'm them, I'm making that trade all the time. And would I take a D tackle over a running back in theory all the time? Like, yeah. I mean, I just think, yes, they're going to be able to get a running back today if they really want one who's probably pretty good, probably one right down the road from Ohio State if they want to go that route. I'm not even sure they're going to go that route there because there might be other players they like. I don't think they're taking Shedeur Sanders with the first pick of the second round. They might trade out of that pick entirely and continue to accrue capital. They've got to hit on those picks, and they eventually have to get a quarterback, a young quarterback. I know they have guys they can play with for this year, including our buddy Flacco. But
yeah.
If I'm the Browns, I'm making that trade.
The Browns are going to stink this year. Yes. This is an eye towards the future to continue to get premium draft capital. And Andrew Berry is saying that maybe next year's draft is more top heavy. You got more blue chippers in that one. And I'm with you, Jason. If I'm them, one of these two second round picks that I have, 33 or 36, I'm looking to trade back and get more future draft picks.
Let's go to Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin, they drafted Oregon defensive tackle Derek Harmon, and Tomlin says that Harmon has Steelers DNA.
You know, like Omar said, man, he has Steeler DNA. For us, man, it starts inside and up front, and this is a guy that's capable of dominating that space versus the run and the pass. And so we're really excited about having him. As Omar mentioned, man, we weren't interested in considering trading away from him, and really excited about getting him in here and getting started.
Omar Khan said it. Mike Tomlin said it. I said it. Bobby D said it. Derek Harmon looks like a Steeler or a Raven, and he is a Steeler. Jason, what do you think of the Harmon pick and the fact they did not go quarterback there?
Yeah, look, if Harmon's not there, I think they probably take Shedeur Sanders. But they loved Harmon. A lot of teams love Harmon. Harmon might turn out to be one of the 5 or 10 best players in this draft if he can really tap into and harness that elite interior pass protection that he was starting to flash before he got hurt. We talked a lot about him a lot on this show, and I told you early on I did not think he was going to make it to the Ravens, but if he did, man, I don't know that they could pass on a kid like that. I think him getting to sort of work with Cam Hayward for a year and then sort of take over, I understand their enthusiasm for this pick.
Now the question is, what do they do at quarterback? They do not have a second round pick because of the DK Metcalf trade.
They do not. You know, is the kid from Louisville there in the third round?
Shock.
I mean, the Kyle McCord kid from Syracuse maybe in the mid rounds. They could still work a trade out for Kirk Cousins.
What about the Ohio State kid? Is it Howard? The you don't like him?
I don't think they like him either. Like everybody's talking Rodgers, Rodgers, Rodgers. Kirk Cousins is not going to be in Atlanta. Doesn't have to happen this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Cousins, when we get to training camp, is not going to be in Atlanta.
You think he's washed, though?
He looks washed.
I don't think his Achilles was ever fully healed.
Fair.
I think he was being used in a weird, out of the pistol all the time and asked to do stuff he wasn't comfortable with. And he knew from the moment they drafted his replacement 6 weeks after he was there that this might not be for long. So I would take a shot on Kirk Cousins way before I took a shot on Aaron Rodgers.
One more, Zach Taylor, head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. What stood out to them about Shamar Stewart?
Overall athleticism, his effort, his play style, his relentlessness. I mean, if there's a word you want to define our defense with, you want 11 guys that are relentless on all snaps. And I think Shamar fits that to a T.
So, Jason, let me ask you. Freak show athlete, did not have a lot of stats. Is he going to be Mike Mamula, or is he going to put up those stats in the NFL?
I trust Bobby D's evaluation on interior defensive players, and he thinks this guy can win for you in 3 or 4 different positions. He told me, and he was around the Browns when they had Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
He looks at the body type. He looks at the wingspan. He looks at some of the advanced metrics, and more than anything else, he looks at the film, not the stats. He looks at the film, and he absolutely loved this kid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I trust Bobby D.
Ultimate football guy.
Yeah.
We going to convince him to come on to talk after the draft, or what are we doing?
We'll see. We're leaning.
D tackle.
He's got a lot going on.
Yeah, we're leaning on Bobby DePaul. He's on social media.
If they take one of his Maryland defensive tackles, there's two he loves. Yes. Then I can't imagine he would say no to that.
He's hawking bikinis for his daughter's store on social media. So
I think he was moving her into her store.
Yeah.
Is he also tweeting about this product?
Yeah.
I know he was moving her into. Moving her into a new apartment. Yeah. Like Delray Beach or something.
Yeah, he's busy. Bobby D's busy.
Sumer Sports.
Yeah. Coming up next here on the program, the Ravens rounds 2 and 3 tonight, the rest of the draft tomorrow. The Ravens have 10 picks. What are we expecting from the Baltimore Ravens? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.